This is the sixth day of this August 2018 seven-day session. We'll take up a koan this morning. This is from the Blue Cliff Record collection of koans. And it's number 18, the National Teacher's Seamless Monument. Here's how it goes. There are many points to this koan. It's more, I think, than any other koan, and a lot of them are comments by the editor of the collection, the Blue Cliff Record. Going through now the first time, I'm going to skip those. Otherwise, we'll take half the day show just reading everything. So, Emperor Daiso asked the national teacher, who was on his deathbed, after 100 years, what will you need? The national teacher said, build a seamless monument for this old monk. The emperor said, please tell me, Master, what the monument should look like. The national teacher was silent for a long time. Then he asked, do you understand? No, I do not, said the emperor. The national teacher said, I have a disciple to whom I have transmitted the teaching. Tangen, let's use the Chinese Danyuan. I have a disciple to whom I have transmitted the teaching, Danyuan, who is well versed in this matter. Please summon him and ask him about it. Then after the national teacher passed on, the emperor summoned Danyuan and asked him about it. Danyuan was silent for a while, then asked, do you understand? No. Then he recited this verse. South of Sho and north of Tan, in between there is gold sufficient to a nation. Beneath the shadowless tree, a community ferry boat. No holy one in the emerald palace you see. So we do have a fair amount of material on this national teacher. His Chinese name, if I can have a stab at pronouncing it, is Nanyang Wei Zhong. And he was one of the five eminent heirs of the sixth patriarch, Wei Nung. Zen scholars say that Zen as we know it really got started. It really got its stamp from the sixth patriarch. It's been the sixth patriarch Zen ever since the 7th century. And so this national teacher, Nanyang Wei Zhong, was highly... is an illustrious master, being one of his disciples. I'm reading here from Andy Ferguson's Zen's Chinese Heritage. This Nanyang entered monastic life as a boy. And he began his study under a Vinaya master, very common with these monks who went on to become great Zen masters, as they first got a grounding in the precepts. A thorough study and investigation of the precepts. And then it says, it just says during 40 years of rigorous practice and study, he thoroughly mastered all aspects of sutra study and meditation practice. Later, he taught the three Tang Dynasty emperors, one of whom is in this koan, and thus he came to be known as the national teacher. He lived to be 100, and his 100 years spanned the golden age of classical Zen. This is the Tang Dynasty. But it says he was not closely associated with any particular lineage, and he attained a stature that transcended the rancorous religious politics of the era. About this, the emperor making him the national teacher, the emperor dispatched an envoy to invite the master to the imperial capital. He received him there with great ceremony. Here's an interesting one. A famous Indian monk named, ready for this, Big Ears Tripitaka. Tripitaka means the three baskets, literally, but it means the whole Buddhist canon, the sutras, the shastras. Shastras are the commentaries on the sutras. So the sutras, that is the purported words of the Buddha, the shastras, the commentaries, and the Abhidharma, is the Buddhist psychology and philosophy. So this Indian monk, Big Ears Tripitaka, came from the West, that would be India, to stay at the capital. He claimed to have telepathic powers. The emperor, that's the same one in today's koan, called on the national teacher to test this monk. When Tripitaka saw the national teacher, he bowed and stood to his right in deference. Must have been some kind of a protocol thing. The national teacher said, "I hear that you have mind-reading power." Tripitaka replied, "I don't presume to say so." Nice, humble response. The national teacher said, "Where do you say I am right now?" Tripitaka said, "The master is a teacher of the whole nation. So why have you gone to the West River to see a boat race?" So apparently, this Indian psychic suggests that he's reading his mind. So maybe the national teacher deliberately conjured up an image of him at this boat race. After a while, the national teacher asked again, "Now where do you say I am?" Tripitaka said, "The master is a teacher of the whole nation. So why have you gone to the Tianjin Bridge to see monkeys playing?" After some time, the national teacher again asked, "Where do you say I am right now?" You know, three is going to be the punchline here. Tripitaka then made a wild guess, and the master shouted, saying, "You wild fox spirit, where is your mind-reading ability?" And Tripitaka couldn't answer. Fox spirit was a kind of a disparaging term, meaning you faker or you imposter. And there's a whole exchange where later, much later, a monk asked Joshu, Zhao Zhou, "Big Ear Tripitaka, couldn't see the national teacher on his third attempt. Where did he go? Zhao Zhou, Joshu, said, on Tripitaka's nose. Later, a monk asked Xuansha, another Zen master, since he was on Tripitaka's nose, why couldn't he see him? Xuansha said, because he was too close. This probably has this other meaning, that just as Tripitaka couldn't see the national teacher on his nose because it was too close, human beings can't see their true nature because it is so close to them. It is them. It is their nose. This is the same national teacher who called out to his attendant three times in a koan in the Mumonkan, but we won't go there now. This is for those of you who've done that koan. This is the guy. Here's an exchange where Zen master Nanxuan, that's Nansen, Joshu's teacher, Nanxuan paid a visit to the national teacher. The national teacher said, where did you come from? And Nanxuan said, from Jiangxi. It's a province or city in China. The national teacher said, then maybe you brought Zen master Ma Zhu's true Dharma along with you. That's another one of the all-time great Zen masters, Ma Zhu or Basso. Nanxuan said, here it is. The national teacher said, on your back? And at these words, Nanxuan attained awakening. And then here's one involving another great master, Ma Yu Baoshi. When Ma Yu came to practice with a national teacher, he circled the meditation platform three times, then struck his staff on the ground and stood there upright. The national teacher said, you are thus, I also am thus. Ma Yu struck his staff on the ground again. The national teacher said, get out of here, you wild fox spirit. It reminds me of when I did something in Doksan once when I was working on Mu with Roshi Kaplow. I won't go into the story again. I think I told it fairly recently. I did something where I finally presented something physically, and he was delighted, and I went out, and then the next time I tried doing the same thing again, moron, and he drove me out. The national teacher entered the Dharma hall and said, those who practice Zen should venerate the words of Buddha. There is but one vehicle for attaining Buddhahood, and that is to understand the great principle that is to connect with the source of mind. If you haven't become clear about the great principle, then you haven't embodied the teaching, and you're like a lion cub whose body is still irritated by fleas. And if, in that state, you become a teacher of others, even attaining some worldly renown and fortune, you are still spreading falsehoods. What good does that do to you or anyone else? A skilled axeman does not harm himself with the axe head. What is inside the incense burner can't be carried by a donkey. Incense has this great significance to it, especially incense ash that represents sitting, zazen. monk asked, "How can one become a Buddha?" The national teacher said, "Cast off the Buddha and all beings, and at that moment you'll be liberated." We could substitute for that, instead of Buddha, because I don't think many people in Western Zen have Buddha stuck in their minds. But really, we could say enlightenment. The word Buddha literally means the awakened one, or you can think of it as Buddha nature. So let's translate that to something that most of us, I think, could relate to more. A monk asked him, "How can one become enlightened?" And he says, "Cast off enlightenment and everything. At that moment, you'll be liberated." It's another one where the national teacher asked a monk, "Where are you from?" The monk said, "From the south." The national teacher said, "Are there any teachers there?" The monk said, "A great many." The national teacher said, "What is it that they teach people?" The monk said, "In that place, worthies directly impart the teaching mind, the teaching mind is Buddha to their students." And then he continues, this monk, "Right now you completely possess the nature of conscious perception. This benevolent nature can cause the raising of an eyebrow and the twinkling in an eye. It is employed when coming or going, and it pervades the body. If you tap your head, the head knows it. If you stamp the feet know it. The ancients called it pervasive consciousness. Aside from this, there is no other Buddha. The body is subject to birth and annihilation, but the nature of mind is beginningless and does not undergo birth and death. The body subject to birth and death is like a dragon that loses and regrows its bones, or a snake that sheds its skin, or a human that leaves his old home. This body is impermanent, but its nature is eternal. This body," that last line is where he trips up. The body's impermanent, but its nature is eternal. The national teacher criticized this, saying, "If that's so, then their teaching is no different from the heretical Seneca doctrine." The footnote tells us that this Seneca, S-E-N-I-K-A, this Seneca doctrine, was one criticized by the Buddha himself. It proposes that the mind is eternal, but form is subject to decay and annihilation. In other words, splitting body and mind. So the national teacher criticized this. "Teachers of that doctrine said, within this body is a spirit. Although the spirit can know the body's affliction, when the body expires, the spirit departs from it. If I am burned up," this is still the idea behind this Seneca doctrine, "if I am burned up, this spiritual host moves on. Although I am not eternal, this host is eternal." And then the national teacher says, "With such an understanding, true and false can't be distinguished." So it's basically the idea of a soul, something eternal, unchanging, that then inhabits one lifetime, one body after another. And this is not Buddhist, the teaching of Buddhist rebirth. That's reincarnation. Reincarnation makes that postulates a soul or some kind of an unchanging entity. And in the Dharma, there is nothing unchanging. Nothing that does not no thing that is unchanging. And yet there is this aspect of reality that is beyond change. This is where it gets confusing. Here's another exchange. A monk asked, "What is Buddha?" The national teacher said, "Mind is Buddha." A monk asked, "Does mind have defilements?" The national teacher said, "Defilements by their own nature drop off." A monk asked, "Do you mean that we shouldn't cut them off?" The national teacher said, "Cutting off defilements is called the second vehicle. When defilements do not arise, that is called nirvana." So this is still this standard teaching and insight that we don't have to get rid of defilements. Just to see through them, and then they cease to be a problem. But our job isn't to get rid of defilements or thoughts or anything else. And yet, we do want to become free of them. That happens on its own through dedicated practice. That's all we have on the national teacher. And then just something here about the this Tangan. That's the Japanese version of the name. It's Dan Yuan, the one who recites this verse to the emperor in the second half of the koan. He was an attendant and a disciple of the national teacher. Not surprisingly. I'm going to turn to a different source here. This is the Golden Age of Zen. This was the only source that we ever heard in Taisho under Roshi Kaplow, because it was before Andy Ferguson's book came out. This is a good one too, but not the translations aren't, the language is a little odd. But it says here, What a severe master the national teacher was can be seen from his treatment of his disciple and attendant, Dan Yuan. One day, one of the teacher's younger friends came to call on him. The national teacher happened to be taking a nap. When the visitor asked Dan Yuan whether the master was at home, Dan Yuan, who had just been initiated into Chan, so that would mean he just had his first breakthrough, sometimes called entering the gate. Dan Yuan, who had just been had that experience, he said, "At home he is, only he is not to be interviewed by any guest." This visitor said, "You are being too profound and remote." Apparently, he thought that the attendant was speaking in code. And then the attendant, Dan Yuan, said, "Not even the Buddha eye can see him." And then thereupon, the visitor said sarcastically, "Indeed, it takes a dragon to beget a little dragon, and a phoenix to bear a baby phoenix," and then went away. So when the master got up, Dan Yuan reported the visit and the exchange they had. To the great surprise of Dan Yuan, the master gave him 20 blows with his cane and drove him away from his door. When the visitor heard of this, he said, "It is not for nothing that the master has been honored as a national teacher." Or in other words, yeah, give it to him. And then the author of this book that I'm reading from, John Wu, suggests that, yes, that a first breakthrough is important, but that he somehow misused that opportunity. For this, I would guess from this response of the national teacher that he would have wanted to be wakened and to visit with this visitor. But then he did, this Danyuan, the attendant, did eventually become a successor to the national teacher. And then we don't really have anything from this Danyuan, about Danyuan, that I think is very useful to read from. It's very short. So much for the national teacher and his attendant, Danyuan. Now, back to the koan. So the emperor, the national teacher, Nanyang Weichong, was dying. He was on his deathbed, and the emperor came to him and said, "After 100 years, what will you need?" A rather puzzling question. It's the first point of this multifaceted koan. After 100 years, or meaning when you're no longer with us, what will you need? He's more or less asking, what do you want me to do after you're gone? And the national teacher said, build a seamless monument for this old monk. Seamless monument. This is a key point to the koan. What could he be referring to? Key word being seamless. And later, there was this exchange between a monk and Joshu. A monk said, "Where is your mind focused?" And Joshu said, "Where there is no design." I really appreciate this reply of Joshu. Because it could be taken in a couple of ways. One is, where there is no design, maybe this is stretching it a little bit, but where there is no agenda, you know, the old-fashioned thing about, you know, if you have designs on someone, then you want something from them. Where there is no design. But the other, more obvious way to understand that, where there is no design, where there is nothing. No image, no thoughts, not two, no edges, no division. And then the emperor followed up by saying, please tell me, master, what the monument should look like. To which the national teacher just remained silent for a long time. And then he finally asked, do you understand? The emperor said, no, I do not. He's honest. He's good. I think of those lines from Affirming Faith in Mind. This ultimate finality beyond all laws can't be described. And then the national teacher said, I have a disciple to whom I have transmitted the teaching, Danyuan, who is well versed in this matter. Please summon him and ask him about it. Well, then at some point, who knows, a week, a month later, after the national teacher had died, the emperor did summon this Danyuan and asked him about it. And Danyuan was silent for a while, then asked, do you understand? He's giving him another chance. No. And then he recited this famous verse. South of Sho and north of Tan, these two names are river boundaries. So it would be like from the Mississippi to the Missouri or whatever. But these are far apart, these two river boundaries. It's a vast amount of territory. South of Sho and north of Tan, in between, there is gold sufficient to a nation. What's he talking about? Gold sufficient to a nation. A Japanese master, Eisai, who introduced Rinzai Zen to Japan, or is so credited with it, Eisai once said, great is mind. Heaven's height is immeasurable, but mind goes beyond heaven. The earth's depth is also unfathomable, but mind reaches below the earth. The light of the sun and moon cannot be outdistanced, yet mind passes beyond the light of the sun and moon. The macrocosm is limitless, yet mind travels outside the macrocosm. How great is space, how great the primal energy. Still, mind encompasses space and generates the primal energy. Because of it, heaven covers and earth upbears. Because of it, the sun and moon move on. The four seasons pass in succession, and all things are generated. Great indeed is mind. Master Hakuin said, what is there outside us? What is there we lack? Nirvana is openly shown to our eyes. This earth where we stand is the pure lotus land. This very body, the body of Buddha. After that south of Sho and north of Tan, Secho, the editor of the Blue Cliff Record, comments. He has little comments in a lot of the koans, and Secho comments, "This soundless sound of one hand." This seems to have been the original appearance of that phrase that went on to become a breakthrough koan that was especially favored by Hakuin. Soundless sound of one hand. What is the sound of one hand? The soundless sound of one hand. In between there is gold sufficient to a nation, to which Secho comments, a rough-hewn staff. Each one of these lines by Danyuan in this verse, each one of the lines has to be demonstrated by the student in Doksan, and also each of Secho's comments. What does he mean? A rough-hewn staff. And then this exquisite line, the third line from Danyuan, beneath the shadowless tree, a community ferry boat. A shadowless tree. What kind of tree casts no shadow? A community ferry boat. We're all in this together. All of us, in our own way, seeking to complete ourselves. Every person, practicing or not practicing, in her or his own way, seeking to reach some kind of self-completion. And then to that, Secho adds, clear is the river, calm is the sea. Ah. If ever these words can be appreciated, it's near the end of a 7-day sesshin. Clear is the river, calm is the sea. And then finally, the fourth line, no holy one in the emerald palace you see. Remember, this is Danyuan, the national teacher's successor, Danyuan addressing the emperor. No holy one in the emerald palace you see. To which Secho comments, all is finished. The Japanese Zen master Bankei might instead have said, all is resolved in the unborn. Our time is up now. We'll stop and recite the four vows. All beings without number, I bow to liberate endless blind passions. I bow to uproot dharma gates beyond measure. I bow to penetrate the great way of Buddha. I bow to attain all beings without number. I bow to liberate endless blind passions. I bow to uproot dharma gates beyond measure. I bow to penetrate the great way of Buddha. I bow to attain all beings without number. I bow to liberate endless blind passions. I bow to uproot dharma gates beyond measure. I bow to penetrate the great way of Buddha. I bow to attain.